lost in a lost world. So many people are dying, lost in a lost world.
This album for me contains probably the group's, is the most melancholy of all of the group's albums, and every, I'm just looking at every single lyric. I mean, this, it's very beautiful because some of the best music you ever write will come out of pain and depression.
When we were working on the Seventh Sojourn album, we always had discussions, meetings. We used to talk about what the album should be about, what we'd like to be the album to reflect. And I think we'd realised we'd sort of come to the end of a part of a journey. And the album suddenly became Canterbury Tales.
This is Justin Hayward.
And I'm John Lodge of the Moody Blues.
And we're in the studio for our number one album of 1972.
Seventh Sojourn.
Down through time, many brilliant philosophers and scientists have attempted to unlock life's mysteries. People like Aristotle and Da Vinci, Isaac Newton, Galileo, Einstein, even Stephen Hawking. Though these scholars have contributed greatly to our understanding, mankind will continue to be fascinated by the universe and our role in it, inexorably drawn to the creator of it all. In 1966, five young men with just such yearning hearts and minds formed a band in Birmingham, England, using their common musical and lyrical abilities to ask the questions that concerned them. They were singer and guitarist Justin Hayward, bass player John Lodge, keyboard player Mike Pinder, flautist and singer Ray Thomas, and drummer Graham Edge, collectively known as the Moody Blues. They reached the pinnacle of the music world in December 1972 with their seventh album entitled Seventh Sojourn. Bruce Etter, writing in the All Music Guide, observes, and I quote, "Seventh Sojourn contains the Moody Blues' hardest rocking body of songs and shows the sudden emergence of John Lodge, who had never been a writing mainstay of the band before, as a major songwriter," end quote. But bass player John Lodge told me that he believes another factor contributed to the Moody Blues' enormous success in late 1972.
I've always seen the Moody Blues as an entity with a nucleus and sort of the electrons spinning round. And every one of us, these electrons rushing round with our own energy. And I think if everyone in the band contributes the energy, then the actual atom itself will be, you know, it's got a power that is, it can be unleashed anywhere, and I think that's what happened. We had a power between us up to that point there when everybody was sort of all pushing one way that led to, you know, Days of Future Past, Seventh Sojourn. And I think when everyone is, you see, having no leader in the Moodies, and it was always pushed along or moved along by the energy from any one person at any one time. So if any one of us at a particular time wasn't actually pushing, someone else was, or moving it, or moving the Moody Blues along in a direction. And I think that was the secret of that at that particular time, because you have to think, when you went into the studio, we were listening to songs, working them out, and it was like, have you heard this? I've got this song. And so you've got this excitement, energy, and thinking, I wonder what's going to happen tomorrow.
There's a forest fire in the valley where the story all began. What will be our last thought? Do you think it's coming soon? Will it be our comfort or the pain of a burning wound? All we are trying to say is we are all we got. You and me just cannot fail. Never, never stop.
By the end of 1972, the Seventh Sojourn album had hit the top of the American album charts, becoming the Moody Blues' first ever number one album in the States. At the same time, Days of Future Past, this is an album that the Moody's had released 4.5 years earlier, was in the midst of a grassroots resurgence started by radio DJs here in America. Unbelievably, the Days of Future Past album and Seventh Sojourn were both perched in the top five at the same time. This is a feat accomplished only once before in pop music history. That was with the Beatles. And yet, as Justin Hayward recounts, the Moody Blues were unable to enjoy this amazing achievement.
For me personally, and for everyone in the band, it was a very unhappy time, because I think that the years preceding that, from about 1970, when we really achieved what I suppose, looking back now, you'd call sort of mega stardom, particularly in America, where there's a number of other groups coming through. We were just probably before Led Zeppelin, but Led Zeppelin were coming with us, and then there was a number of other groups. We'd become more enclosed and sort of closeted, you know, with private planes, limos everywhere. There was no one. It was a very close sort of circle. It's very hard to get into that circle. And I was 19 when I joined the band, and through this period of my life, I'd done all of my growing up in the band, and I didn't have any life. I didn't actually have life I didn't exist as a person.
Moody Blues bass player and songwriter John Lodge.
So we suddenly had this huge, huge success, but the rest of the world was falling apart. I mean, if you can remember at that time in the 73 period, I know there was a depression in Europe, in Great Britain. No one was working more than 2 or 3 days a week. There really were soup kitchens. There really were. I mean, you know, in a civilized world, everything in the world seemed to be in a huge turmoil. I remember this turmoil going on everywhere we went. And I remember we were flying one day and we chartered a 707 with our own keyboard player who sat in like a disco floor. So when the 707 took off, it was just the five of us. We had about five people flying the plane. We had our own butler. We had our own person playing this organ. And I remember walking, you know, through the flight. I remember walking from the front of the 707 to go to the restroom at the back to the toilet. And I walked past the organist playing. I walked past the barman making some drinks. And then I walked past this sort of sitting room area with a fireplace. I walked past two bedrooms. I went to the toilet and I was in there and I thought, I'd never been so lonely in my life, you know, and sort of walked past it. It was like walking, it really was, sort of walking down this huge tunnel of nothing, but, you know, materialism and wealth and everything else, what we'd bought, you know, what we'd chartered. And it was just, and I suddenly realised, I got back and there was all, just the five of us sitting at the front, just talking about absolutely nothing. We'd lost all the art of conversation because we'd been together so much. And I thought, well, this is ridiculous. I don't really want to be on this plane.
Somewhere in the dark end.
Living in a Land of Make-Believe, sung by guitarist Justin Hayward, comes from the Moody Blues' Seventh Sojourn album. Up next, John Lodge rocks rhetorically with Isn't Life Strange? Follow In the Studio on Facebook, on Twitter at Redbeard Rocks, and online anytime at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard in the studio with Justin Hayward and John Lodge of the Moody Blues on the anniversary of their worldwide number one seller, Seventh Sojourn.
Hi, this is Justin Hayward.
And I'm John Lodge of the Moody Blues.
And we're in the studio for our number one album of 1972.
Seventh Sojourn.
Thank you both. I'm Redbeard. Released in late November 72, but the first single from the album, the John Lodge written Isn't Life Strange, had actually snuck into the American Top 30 some 5 months earlier. It was John Lodge who told me how the song had been quickly recorded in keyboardist Mike Pinder's garage.
Mike had built this studio in his garage, and the ceiling was about 7 feet high. Temperatures must have been up in the 120s. And, the equipment was really... it was the equipment that we'd put together ourselves, basically. And we went in there. We were starting an American tour. Justin and I went in there and finished the vocals, did a vocal session. We finished at about 2 o'clock in the morning. It was mixed there and then. We left the following morning for the USA with the tape, took it to the record company in New York, and the following week it was out as a single because we started the tour on the Monday. That's how things happened then. It's quite amazing now because we're talking about high-tech CD now, and the actual record was made in a garage. The original garage band we were then.
Isn't life strange? A turn of a page can read like before. Can we ask for each day passes by? How hard man will try, the sea will not. I can be
isn't life strange? A turn of a page, a book without lines. Unless with love we rise.
Whether the verses and chorus were actually intended to be part of the same tune, here's the composer of Isn't Life Strange, John Lodge.
It was all written at once, and all the verses only had the three Isn't Life Strange. When Isn't Life Strange, Isn't Life Strange, Isn't Life, the whole thing. And then the chorus, when I got to the where I thought the chorus should be, the chorus came out immediately. And then I remember Lennon was trying to write one song with one note all the way through. And I thought, and, you know, I remember saying to Tony Clark, I've written this song. Do you think I could just use the one lyric all the way through? Isn't Life Strange? And I tried it out. I remember sitting at the piano trying it out, thinking, I wonder if I could get away with the whole, every verse just saying, Isn't Life Strange? And I thought afterwards, perhaps not. And then, of course, as soon as I realised what I was trying to say, then the lyric actually all came. I mean, it was very quick, the whole song. We were actually having dinner when I wrote the song.
Well, I've had dreams enough for one, and I've got love enough for three. I have my hopes to comfort. Got my new horizons out to see, but I'm never gonna lose your precious gift. It will always be that way, 'cause I know I'm gonna find my peace of mind someday.
Though it's not really a concept album, John Lodge and Justin Hayward explain that Seventh Sojourn does have a common thread running through it.
All these sleeves were painted by Phil Travers, every one, up until this was up until Seventh Sojourn.
That was the last one.
This is the last one. And I remember when he sort of came along with the painting, and no one could understand what it was. And because we all thought it was sort of a moonscape, but realised it wasn't because of the sharpness of some of the areas. And then he said, it's a dead piece of wood. And, you know, thinking about it now, when you look on the inside, there's a dead piece of wood with one little bud just growing from it. Just one little bud. And it makes you wonder now whether even the artist realised that this thing that we'd had for since 66 had really come to an end. And if we just looked after it and nurtured it, it would grow again. Perhaps, I don't know, but there it is. When we were working on the Seventh Sojourn album, we always had discussions, meetings. We used to talk about what the album should be about, what we'd like to be the album to reflect. I think we'd realised we'd sort of come to the end of a part of a journey, and the album suddenly became Canterbury Tales. And it was our own idea of sort of sitting down around a campfire and say, we've come this far, what do we know? And I think this is how Singer in a Rock and Roll Band came, because people were trying to tell us we knew the answers to everything. And we were just sitting there, and it was like, just a minute, we just sings in a rock and roll band, you know. Let's tell our stories from that point of view. And, you know, everything that comes with it is materialistic, really, you know, the private chartered 707s, the limousines, the convoys of limousines, the convoys of security. And it bore, really wasn't part of the life that I was as a human being. And so suddenly we realised it was, the album became Sojourn, and suddenly the seven part of it was obvious because it was sort of the day of rest. And also that our seventh album.
It was our seventh album.
My boat sails stormy seas, battles oceans filled with tears. At last my port's in view, now that I discovered you.
and sung by Moody Blues flautist Ray Thomas, that's For My Lady. Still to come, the Moody Blues' response to the ill-founded belief that they actually had the answers to all of life's questions. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with John Lodge and Justin Hayward of the Moody Blues' Seventh Sojourn.
Welcome back to In the Studio. I'm John Lodge of the Moody Blues.
I'm Justin Hayward of the Moody Blues. Welcome back to In the Studio, this week focusing on Seventh Sojourn.
And here's Redbeard.
Thanks, John. Seventh Sojourn successfully wrapped up the second musical era of the Moody Blues, and with its number one selling massive popularity, the band mounted a huge 9-month world tour that extended into 1974. With hindsight, it's no wonder that when the band members attempted to then record a follow-up to Seventh Sojourn, the sessions didn't yield a thing. Truth be told, it would be 4 long years before the Moody Blues would ever be able to record again. But the Sojourn had come to an end for at least one band member, founding keyboard player, songwriter Mike Pinder. In looking back on the cost of success, Justin Hayward sees the Seventh Sojourn period with some ambivalence.
This album, for me, contains probably the group's, is the most melancholy of all of the group's albums. And every, I'm just looking at every single lyric. I mean, this, it's very beautiful because some of the best music you ever write will come out of pain and depression. But I mean, the very, for Mike himself, this is where he peaked, I think. And he couldn't, as a writer, he couldn't follow this, what he'd done on this album. And I know, and we'll always miss him. But I know that there was no music kind of left in him. But he, the very first words of the album, he says, "I woke up today, I was crying, I was lost in a lost world." Now every song, you know, is, goes on in that vein.
And then you're talking about the Vietnam War, and I remember seeing, well, the vivid pictures now, but I don't really want to go into those anymore. But on there, and when you see a frightened person who's frightened by the people who are scorching the earth, you know, I remember seeing these little children, you know, and I thought, oh my gosh, what's going on? There's us flying around the world, doing concerts, rock and roll, everybody's having a great time, everybody's out the mind, and yet the same plane could be part of, you know, the same engineers, the same everything. And the two things were such a conflict for me, especially my two children being born at the time and growing up, and it was just a moment, you know, the world's gone mad.
Up today, I was crying, lost in a lost world. So many people are dying, lost in a lost world. Some of them are living an illusion, bounded by the darkness of their eyes. In their eyes, it's nation against nation with racial pride. Sad hearts they hide, thinking only of themselves. They shun the light, they take their rights, living in their empty shells. Oh, can you see their world is flashing? Telling them they've had their fill, politics that move them through. Oh, seeds of evolution, revolution never won. It's just another form of gun to do again what they have done. And all our brothers, youngest,
turn you feel the pain. Everyone is looking for the answer. Well, look again. Come on, my friend. Love will find them in the end. Come on, my friend. We've got to bend on our knees and say our prayer. Oh, can you feel what is fighting?
So many people
pining for someone who really cares enough to share his love with all of us, so we can be an ever-loving family. Have you forgotten we're all children? Children from a family tree that's longer than a centipede. Started long ago when you and I were only lost. Today I was crying, lost in a lost world. So many people are dying, lost in a lost world.
One of the greatest benefits to being a modern touring musician is the opportunity to travel and experience the differences and the similarities of cultures around the world. Here's Justin Hayward.
You know, I've learned the importance of music, and I've also learned the triviality of music. You know, it's wonderful, it makes us all feel great, but it's probably just above ice cream in the level of sort of importance. But it does have the, or and, I should say, it does have the capacity to make the world a better place, more so than any other thing, entity, person, medium I've ever known in my whole life. That's why it is so wonderful. As a European, as I am, you know, I know that music was more responsible than any politician's voice, no matter what anybody says, in breaking down the barriers between the part of Europe that I live in and the part of Europe that my neighbours live in. And that's, and the Voice of America and the British Broadcasting Corporation and those people that were beaming, well, maybe their own kind of rock and roll, you know, into the East, made the difference. I swear, their generation grew up and was changed because of music, and so it does know no barriers.
As the Moody Blues discovered in their second era psychedelic period, which effectively ended with Second Sojourn, one of the side effects of such lofty lyrics is that certain segments of the audience expected the Moodies to have the answers to life's big challenges. That's when John Lodge unequivocally stated, "I'm just the singer in a rock and roll band." Moody Blues bass player John Lodge.
I think, you know, we were there as well with everyone else. I mean, we were looking for lofty things as well. I mean, we were searching just like everyone else, because we all came all through the same period of time as everyone else with us, you know, then. And the world was expanding and opening up so quickly. There were so many things bombarding us, so many religions, so many things that were going on. But at the same time, that the two things that really hit me, that when you're actually standing on stage in a pair of jeans and a T-shirt, you know, that's what I am. I'm from a 15-year-old rock and roller. You know, I just want to say I am a singer in a rock and roll band. And then as soon as I sort of thought about that, I suddenly realised that all the other things fell into place. You know, everyone telling you what you should be doing. And that's why I put the thing in, it depends who's painting the picture. You know, who are you going to believe? And then there's another line in there, riots by the people.
Trying to be free, and while I'm driving by, so many words, language barriers broke, and now we found the key. And if you want the
certain to be a concert closer on the Moody Blues 50th Anniversary Tour. That's I'm Just a Singer in a Rock and Roll Band, from the album Seventh Sojourn, on its anniversary as the number one seller worldwide. I'm Redbeard. We'll be back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guests Justin Hayward and John Lodge. Congratulations to the Moody Blues on their induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I couldn't be happier. In the Studio was written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2017. All rights reserved. Theme song by Andy Timmons and transcription by Jane Carpenter Brunet.